I stared in sickened horror as my face disappeared and his whole head turned inside out. And now I was gaping at the head of a hideous monster. A fat red tongue flopped out from the creature's pale wet skin. A red nose, bulbous with three nostrils, flapped loose from its face. The eyes were yellow, the size of tennis balls, and bulged out from deep red sockets. No! I uttered a moan of horror and shrank back. The creature's body changed slowly, expanding in all directions, turning into a hard purple shell. The arms, my arms, slid into the monster's shiny wet skin, and enormous red claws poked out. Like giant crab claws, they stretched and clicked, clicked as if sharpening themselves. The whole creature glistened with sweat. The yellow tennis ball eyes rolled like fly eyes in the round red face. The crab claws raised themselves up from the purple hard-shelled body, clicking, snapping, and clicking. I watched in stunned horror, my fright changing to anger. You lied, I yelled, shaking my fist at the hideous creature in the mirror. You lied to me. You're not my ghost. You're a monster. Hello.
And welcome.
To Say Podcast and Die.
It is a queer pop culture podcast where we talk about Goosebumps and horror. Something we haven't done in a site.
That's right. I'm Alyssa.
I'm Andy.
Do we want to talk about where we've been and what we've been doing?
Well, guys, we first read the book for this one back in March. So yeah. Let's start by saying that.
I'm excited to be surprised all over again by reading my own notes.
I know. We have really tried. Okay, well, let's walk it back. I quit being a professor. I thought it was boring, and I didn't like it, and after being depressed about it for a while, I decided to apply to law school. So I spent the last year as a 1L. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the experience of being a 1L, but it's terrible.
Oh, and we had a baby who wasn't sleeping through the night.
Yes.
And, yeah.
She didn't sleep through the night until January.
Yeah.
And I was...
She's great, but it was hard.
Oh, she's epically amazing. I was lactating, so I had to pump like 6 times a day. You.
Yeah, I have a full-time job, also outside of academia.
You've gotten a couple promotions in it in the past year, which means more and more work.
Yeah, so time has been scarce. Oh, also we're having some sound quality issues today. Our microphone is on its last legs.
Yeah, it was a surprise after several months to open it up and find out that it was sick of us.
R.I.P.
Yeah, it's like, remember in Beauty and the Beast where they're like, life is so unnerving for a microphone who's not serving.
You know? It's like the rose petals falling off. It's, uh-huh. That's what our microphone is doing.
Yeah, so it's we're dusting it off, but it might be donezo.
So all that to say, we've been a little busy and we've missed you and we've missed doing this.
But now we have full-time childcare.
It's amazing.
I'm a 2L. Hopefully you're going to keep your same position for a while. We're not moving to a new state. That's something else we did this past year.
That's also why our sound quality has changed recently. You're hearing the dulcet sounds of New York City outside.
Yeah, I think we told them that at some point. There's an elevator right by us. It's a lot.
Yeah.
I think we're moving again. But anyway, not to a new state. Not even to a new city. We're sticking here.
That's right.
Anyway, thank you guys. Thank you guys. It's been really exciting keeping up with the email when I've been able to dip in there. I did not pull up the emails for today, but we've got some great emails I'm looking forward to sharing with you all where Goosepunks have written in, talking about the show, talking about their stories. And we've got new listeners, and they don't even know that we went on hiatus for almost a year.
Yeah, don't tell them.
Yeah, don't tell them. And we hope that you all classic Goosepunk listeners, pre-series 2000.
Original series listeners.
Exactly. We'll continue to stick with us. We are going to finish Ghost in the Mirror. Oh my god, it took us so long to get to this last one.
I think it might have taken us longer to do series 2000 than to do the original 62, 63 books.
Yeah, and then, well, I mean, we had a lot of energy during the pandemic.
Before we had a baby? Yeah.
Yeah, that one. But then we're going to, I think, try our next book as some of R.L. Stine's adult work.
Yeah, we're going to do a wrap-up episode where we look back on the series 2000 as a whole. I am so excited, though, to dive into Superstitious, the novel that I think made me gay, like just totally turned me off heterosexual sex. Andy also found a TV series that ran in the 90s called Ungodly Goosebumps that we want to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm eager to do the TV show. I'm eager to get through some more of the stories. the goal right now is to do an episode a month, maybe two if we're lucky, just trying to be realistic because we still have kind of a lot going on. But hopefully things will start to settle out and we'll get into a routine with us.
So, without further ado, Ghost in the Mirror.
The cover. It looks like the hand of, like, maybe the werewolf from, or the creature from Jekyll and Hyde. And the mirror looks like a pool of water. We're in a dark room with the classic Tim Jacobus assorted objects on table.
Yeah, it's very cool. I also really like the color scheme with the very bright blue mirror and the faded, washed out everything else, but also these like sort of green highlights. It's very cool.
Yeah, it reminds me of the cover of Shrunken Head a lot. Mm. And this story reminds me a lot of Let's Get Invisible.
Of course.
Minus invisibility. It is 1999, because Series 2000, that's where it stops. And did you notice the copy on archive.org where the book came from? It's from the Alston Public Library.
Oh,
and our we used to live right next to Alston in Austin.
Speaking of archive.org, I wrote this note way back when I read the book. I guess at the time they were running a sort of campaign to raise money. So if you like this podcast and want to support it and you're able, give a few bucks to the Internet Archive and the Wayback Machine, because that's how we've been reading all these books lately.
Yeah, they're useful for a lot of things. Okay.
Andy, can you give the 1-2 sentence summary of this one?
I don't really remember it. I'm about to find out what happened.
I ask you.
Well, my understanding is there's this mirror. It sucks people in and replaces them with monster people. And I think that's the plot. Mm-hmm. So kind of Let's Get Invisible meets The Ghost Next Door.
Yeah.
You don't remember it all, do
you? No, it was. I'm just trying to think if there's a different Goosebumps book that really gets to the monster component, because that was the biggest surprise to me, as I recall, was it not being a Let's Get Invisible situation totally.
Right. I think we couldn't expect that Robert Lawrence sat down, was like, fuck, I have to write one more book. I was like, okay, here's two that were successful. What could I add? Monster, why not? You already titled it Ghost in the Mirror, sir. Too bad. Because the picture on the cover has nothing to do with what happens in the story.
No.
All right. Our main character.
Jason. Self-described wimp. He has a classic annoying sister, Claudia, but this time it's an older sister.
Mm-hmm.
She has red and blue braces and likes to scare him. For example, she made him think that a rat was living under his bed.
Because she hid a dead rat under his bed. Yuck.
Yeah.
No, Claudia, stop. Where did you get a dead rat?
I know, right?
Why did you pick it up?
She also once put spaghetti in his bed.
That's gross. Kind of convenient. I'm like, joke's on you. I get spaghetti while I sleep.
And when the book opens, she's accusing him of being vain because he can't walk past a mirror without checking himself out.
Yeah. So we're getting back to bad sibling dynamic roots. We're also getting back to terriers in trouble. So we have a cute, tiny terrier mutt named Buzzy. And going into this, I was feeling still not over the fate of the terrier in Welcome to Dead House. So I was very nervous for Buzzy.
Same. Another thing that his sister likes to tease him about is that he has a quote-unquote baby room, because it's painted the same way it was when he was a baby and has the same furniture.
Dude, we're in a baby room right now.
Yeah, we don't have a closet that is sizable enough to accommodate podcasting, so we're in a baby room. It's a pretty small room.
Yeah, it's got baby stuff in it. No baby, though. She's at daycare. Well, I was just going to say, this is like a very classic Goosebumps theme of being in a time of transition from childhood to teenagerhood, but not quite on either side of that line. He's got this light blue dresser he had since he was a baby and the little bed, and he's tried to cover everything in wrestling posters. But his dad has been out of work for almost a year and his family can't afford new furniture. Another classic Goosebumps theme.
Yeah, very different from some of the more recent books we've seen.
I know. It went in this weird direction where it was trying to be all like, oh, it's like cool to be rich in the mid-90s. So they had all these like, I don't know.
Hollywood kid.
Or yeah, How I Learned to Fly, that guy.
Yeah.
But now we're getting back to sort of the place of Night of the Living Dummy, where they're like, I guess you two are sharing a room because we were not planning on two kids and we already bought this house.
And what's interesting about this is their mom actually intervenes in the fight. And she says, this is where she explains, he has old furniture because they can't afford new stuff because their dad has been out of work for nearly a year. And so again, that we've seen a lot of parents ignore stuff like this. So it was kind of refreshing to see that.
Mm-hmm.
So then we jumped to 2 weeks later when Jason is playing catch with his friend, Fred. Fred is very uncoordinated and not athletic, which will come into play later. And then mom and dad say, we have a surprise for you. They got him antique furniture, including a mirror, which he feels strangely drawn to.
It's trying so hard, you know?
Yeah.
They're like, okay, you don't want baby stuff.
How about really old stuff?
And he's like, no, masculinity stuff. A similar thing happened when I was in high school and I wanted a Dickies jacket so I could look like a cool emo kid. My parents got me a Carhartt coat, so I looked like a, you know, horse tending kid. Yeah. It's hard to know what your kid means.
Yeah. We also continue the theme of suspicious garage sale. The dresser drawers are stuck shut. So it's not really a functional dresser, but he does have it.
Mm-hmm.
He also feels like it makes the room feel bigger.
Yeah.
So he gets some interior design tips as well.
I don't know why a large dresser would make the room feel bigger.
I think the mirror is what makes the room feel bigger.
Oh. Gotcha. I think that is a mislead. I think it just looks tacky when you cover your room in mirrors. But
it's one mirror. He's not covering his room in mirrors.
Okay. Well, the important thing is...
Hot takes from Andy.
Something that's very dangerous in Arlstein's universe is stuff made out of trees.
True.
Think about Slappy. Think about Mr. Wood. Think about actual trees that have been dangerous.
Stuff made out of trees, you know, trees.
Houses made out of redwoods. Well, here we've got furniture made out of trees instead of good old-fashioned plastic. This is our problem.
Well, then we come to what I think is one of the most endearing jovial Bob moments of all time, when Arlstein thinks he has to explain to his audience of 98-year-olds what video basketball is.
What is video basketball?
Well, they sit down to play a video game, and the joke is Fred's so uncoordinated he can't even play video basketball on their Nintendo or whatever.
Do you call it video basketball?
They called it that in the game.
Huh. I feel like this is a Mummy Cases moment where you're like, or taco chips.
Or basketball video game, whatever. But like, I think my notes say basketball video game, but I'm pretty sure you called it like video basketball or something.
No, that sounds right, because that's, I have NBA video game in my notes. We don't remember. Anyway, he explains it.
So as they're playing, Fred gets distracted by the mirror.
Which I thought was a nice touch. The mirror looks brighter and clearer than reality, which is part of what draws him to it. Kind of like WWF, which he's also into. Better than reality.
Is it better than reality?
Well, I mean, I think it's supposed to be. That's why they, like, choreograph the fights, you know?
Later, Fred goes home. Jason eats Oreos and Coke, like we did for the entire, like, year last year.
Yeah, very relatable.
But after that, Jason goes back to his room and finds a note. Beware. Bring this into your house and you bring death.
And the note is yellowed and stained.
Too little too late, but...
At this point, did you know what the twist would be?
No, I was assuming it was Claudia because I was like, fuck it. If I have to read 10 chapters of there's something bad, but we have to spend 10 chapters dealing with Claudia, I'm going to be so mad. And I was actually very pleasantly surprised that... It wasn't.
Well, I think this is the first time in our entire relationship where I have picked up on a twist before you.
The dresser left the note?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You figured that out.
No. I definitely thought it was Claudia.
Oh, wow. Well, Claudia didn't do it, but she tries to scare him and be like, oh, there's something moving in the mirror. And then he knocks over his Coke and makes a big mess.
Because it's the 90s and there's wall-to-wall carpeting.
Mm-hmm. And then I have, as my next heading, Buzzy Frowny Face.
Aww. So Jason's relating this to Fred, and he's starting to think Claudia actually didn't write it. They're playing soccer, and apparently Jason told Fred that he should join the intramural team because there are lots of bad players, but for some reason that doesn't sell Fred on playing soccer. So they hear Buzzy barking, which Jason thinks is unusual, even though Buzzy is a terrier.
Yeah.
And he's barking at the mirror. If he's like our dog, he's barking at himself, but Jason's freaked out by this.
And mom and dad just laugh when he tries to tell them. They're in a great mood because dad got hired for a job 20 minutes away, which is quite a detail to deliver.
You know how kids really appreciate a good commute.
Yeah. But it's great. Dad's got a job. And Claudia's really glad because it turns out she's popular and didn't want to move.
Yeah. She denies writing the note, but she says she did write a short story in school called The Haunted Mirror about a girl who died 100 years ago and haunts the mirror, and then a new boy gets it.
And yeah, gets possessed. And mom and dad say, sounds good, very imaginative. And I was like, R.L. Stine, is this a compliment to yourself? Being the writer of such a story?
This is another moment where I was dreading, like, she's going to be doing this whole hoax of this 100-year-old girl. And
I mean, that would have been kind of cool.
Would it have?
Yeah, like, in a, like, what a manipulative, scary sibling.
That's true.
But also, I want to point out Food Watch. We've got fried chicken and mashed potatoes. And I also want to point out that in many ways, Claudia is probably a lot like Kid R.L. Stine was. Picking on siblings, writing creepy stories for English class, wearing glasses.
Eating mashed potatoes.
Maybe popular, I don't know. I assume a little popular.
Well, then they hear growling and they find Buzzy in front of the mirror again. Jason goes to comfort him, but then gets bitten.
On the neck! Buzzy's eyes are glowing, and he leaps up and bites Jason on the neck and draws blood. This is extreme even for a terrier.
Then their dad says, I'll take the dog away, and I got super worried for Buzzy.
Me too. And Claudia just thinks this is so cool. What a scary situation.
Later, Jason's playing games with Fred again, and they look in the mirror and see Buzzy's reflection, but with no Buzzy, because Buzzy's in the garage.
Both of them see it?
Yeah. And then they call Claudia in, but it vanishes for her.
Uh-huh. And also, for a minute there, Jason is afraid that he is going to get rabies. But I just had a thought about that. You know? The, like, trope of people like, I thought quicksand was going to come up more often than it did. rabies. Another thing I thought was going to come up more often than it did. But whereas quicksand was simply not really the thing that we were led to believe it was. I wonder if there was an era where children needed to be a lot more worried about rabies.
Yeah, probably the era where dogs were just, like, roaming the streets.
Yeah, and didn't have vaccines for that.
Yeah.
So, going downstairs, getting Cokes from the fridge. Coke. Fred is gone.
Yeah, he comes back to his room where he left Fred, but Fred is gone. No one has seen him. His parents are like, don't worry about it. Why don't you watch an old Hitchcock movie with us?
Mm-hmm. Which Hitchcock movie do you think they were watching?
Vertigo, maybe?
Why Vertigo?
Because it's about weird doubles.
Ah.
What did you think it was?
I just am coming up all rope just because there's two kids. People going mysteriously missing.
Mm.
But I don't really know. I have to think about it more. Maybe when we recap what actually happened in this.
Maybe we'll know. Well, Claudia then does a jump scare in a rubber Halloween mask, playing the greatest hits.
We're doing a lot less, like, ending on a cliffhanger chapters, I noticed. Especially ones that turn out to be fake outs.
Yeah. After Jason goes to sleep or he gets in bed, he hears whimpering coming from inside the mirror.
And then the next day, he sees Fred at school and Fred's like, what, I just went home. And then they go out to the middle school playground. Have you ever seen a middle school playground?
It might be attached to an elementary school that has a playground.
Maybe. I don't think middle schools have playgrounds. Maybe basketball courts.
I mean, our middle school was attached to an elementary school, so I think we'd sometimes go do PE out there.
Well, Fred is suddenly good at sports. And everyone says, you're possessed. Totally possessed.
Not everyone. Jason says, in a way that he thinks is a compliment, you're totally possessed. And then Fred gets mad and starts punching him.
Yeah. Jason's had a rough time.
Yeah. To be fair, he has been kind of negging him. Again, punching is not an appropriate response, but Jason's like, I don't understand why he could be mad at me. He's like,
Yeah, maybe because you make fun of him about sports all the time when you're also not good at sports. But I will say, like, friendship reversals happen around this age and are very painful when you're like, oh, I thought we were friends, but now we've, you know, diverged routes a la my so-called life.
Mm.
So Jason got punched and stuff, and he gets sent home early.
And Fred gets suspended.
I think someone should be watching him, probably, if he's feeling sick after getting punched in the face. Yeah. And then it says, once again, I pictured Fred pounding me. Pounding me. So.
Yeah.
It gets a little gay. I mean, it's wrestling. He's clearly into thinking about dudes on dudes, and good for him.
At home, Jason looks in the mirror and sees two shadows, Buzzy and Fred, and he's very afraid.
In that night, he hears breathing from the mirror, and it's kind of this a black mirror, if you will. It's turned black. It's not reflecting anything. I don't know why he decides to then press his hand against the mirror, but he does. Like, he's never seen, you know, Alice in Wonderland adaptation. And then he Fred forms out of the darkness and pulls him towards the mirror.
Well, he wakes up. It's a dream. Maybe. And he has scratches on his arm. Mm-hmm. And then he looks at the mirror and there's a figure and it says, I am your ghost.
Well, and also, here we get very Freudian. So the mirror is a dark hole with a black tunnel leading.
What could it mean?
Well, remember how he's in his baby room? I think he'd be afraid of being dragged back whence he came into this womb, haunted by his former baby status from when he was nothing.
Speaking of being nothing, this figure says, I am your ghost. You died of fright last night. And so now you need to come into the mirror.
He feels hypnotically drawn to the mirror, and the ghost grips him, and he hears Buzzy barking from far away, and jerks himself free, and the ghost roars and says, get in here. And then we get some very excellent body horror.
Yeah, things really took a turn in a way that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, up to this point, I was not super impressed. And then
the figure's mouth opens and it turns inside out. It's like, my next note is, it's some kind of rad monster, exclamation point, because I'm a child.
Yeah, I put rad body horror. His mouth opens wider and wider and then flaps back over his head and swallows his face. And a tongue flops out, a red nose with three nostrils, eyes the size of tennis balls, and a purple shell with giant crab claws, which is why I say the cover is a little misleading. Mm-hmm. But that's an unexpected monster.
Yeah.
Crab claws.
Very much so. And it tries to pull him in. Jason's grabbing frantically for something
And saying, you lied.
Yeah, sweetie.
Not the biggest issue here.
The only thing he can grab on his way in is a small hand mirror. Really, nothing he does, like, affects the creature. And the creature says, I'll be replacing you.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jason decides to hold up the mirror, you know, his one weapon that he was able to grab. And it makes even more monsters. And he backs up and falls out of the mirror and very luckily watches all the other monsters in the mirror attack each other.
That's really fucking cool, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's like something out of Howzu. Mm-hmm. Like, this very trippy version of horror where, he makes the monsters multiply by reflecting them back and forth in the mirror. I can't totally picture how this setup works, but I love the idea.
Yeah. Again, my next note, it's very gruesome. Rad.
And he sees all the monsters attacking each other in the mirror, and he runs calling for his parents, tries to show them, and then, you know, the classic horror thing, nothing there anymore. And Dad says, let's call Dr. Fleason. I googled Dr. Fleason, psych professor who specializes in personality psychology, William Fleason.
Ah, yeah, they also do the thing of debating what's wrong with him while standing in front of him.
But we still don't get to go to a frickin' therapist.
No. So the next morning, it's very awkward. But then they realize that there is a hole in the garage. Buzzy has basically chewed through it and is gone. Jason's very upset. He starts biking. He's following the trail. And then he finds Fred holding a car above his head.
Yeah, his house is completely wrecked and he's growling and his eyes are glowing like a demon's.
And this is when the penny drops that it's not really Fred. That's why he's so good at sports.
And then the police pull up with guns and he just bikes away.
He goes to school.
Yeah.
We just, like, leave that there.
Well,
there's no, like, nobody is bothered after this about a middle school child picking a car up over his head.
Well, I think the police probably are. I think something goes down there, but Jason's like, I don't think I can provide anything to this situation, nor am I going to get in the way of, or in between my friend and danger.
Yeah. So then we cut to that night. Apparently he had a normal school day, except for feeling a little nervous.
But he gets a little bit of conviction and thinks, I should go rescue the real Fred and Buzzy. He stares into the mirror and it starts to cloud over and become porous. And I wonder why. Is the mirror possessed and conscious in some way and full of demons? Have the demons come up with some technology that allows them to move through this mirror, but only if someone's looking long enough?
Yeah, it almost like has to sort of welcome someone in some way, but only sometimes.
And on a metaphorical level is the idea that if you stare too long into your own reflection.
That's not what I thought you were saying.
Were you thinking the abyss?
I was thinking vagina because you brought it up earlier.
Oh, right. Well, if you stare too long into yourself, your complex origins, it's like you start to become estranged to yourself.
Maybe lose yourself.
Yeah.
He goes in the mirror. He takes a step and then falls through the floor lands hard, and then he wakes up to hundreds of mirrors. Fred is there, and so is the real Buzzy.
It's like a fun house, and he tries to punch Fred.
Yeah, because he doesn't think it's really Fred. So he tries to punch him, and this Fred is uncoordinated scared. Nerd Fred, so yeah.
Yeah, he's like, oh no, punching, and then he's like, cool, you're Fred. Because being a wimp is something that's perfectly fine to be in the Gooseverse. It's what many of the best characters are.
Apparently, Jason feels very secure having a wimp sidekick friend.
Mm-hmm.
So they're able to move the panes of glass. They find a path, and it just is getting colder and colder. It's reminding me again of the cold place from Let's Get Invisible.
And we're kind of somewhere between us and 2001 A Space Odyssey as he's going through this trippy maze that seems to move between different laws of physics too, right?
Yeah, it's not unlike that scene from Cabin in the Woods where they're seeing all the different creatures.
That's true. And he goes through this tunnel that seems lit by a million crystals, which is less like most vaginas.
Most, but not all.
I don't know. Some might have been bedazzled.
Well, they find the correct mirror, and they see Claudia, and they're trying to get her attention. She doesn't see them, but she does take his Game Boy without his permission.
That's so rude. My brother did that.
I think a lot of siblings do that.
He did it recently. My Game Boy Color. I think he might still have it.
Well, if you're listening, Goosebumps.
Will. You can keep it. I think I might have said that to you at some point, but I might want to borrow it again. In case I need to get back into Pokemon Blue. Okay, so he pulls out his little mirror, uses it to make two Freds, then three, then five, but all of these Freds are not strong enough to slide the mirror open.
And then, so Fred says, 100 Freds couldn't break through this thing. I just really like that he referred to himself in the third person.
Also, the other Freds just walk off and disappear, and I would think original Fred would be concerned about them.
Yeah.
But he is not.
No. I think he's been through a lot.
Are these doubles not fully formed human beings?
They must not be.
More like copies
somehow. Yeah. Well, then Jason aims his little handheld mirror at the glass, which melts it?
Mm-hmm. Something like that. It sizzles. A hole opens. And they walk out into his room.
And then they run into Jason's doppelganger. The monster doesn't seem to care that they've escaped the mirror. He knows he's stronger. And then Jason holds up the little mirror and he's like, get that out of my way.
Yeah, he slaps it out of his hands with his crab hands. And then Jason rips his eyes out.
He rips his eyes out!
Shoves it in the mirror. It's a real Odysseus move, actually. Yeah. You got some Polyphemus call out here.
Yeah, and then he smashes the mirror.
Good move.
Yeah, even though his mom sees him do it.
And he says, it's over, I'm okay now. Which, again, just now as a parent, thinking about walking in here and seeing our little goose punk do that.
And she's like, don't worry about it. And because their mom agrees, yeah, let's just memory hole all of this. It never happened.
I mean, I feel like if I walked in here and saw baby Goosepunk smash one of her mirrors with a lamp and say, it's okay now, I would be like, good. It's okay now. Let's clean this up. I'm glad you took care of whatever that was.
So you're saying this mom did the right thing?
I think so. If the kid feels safe.
I mean, I think the difference is our Goosepunk is 1.5.
Yeah. I say, you know, also get your kid to therapy, probably goose parents. But I think they're probably really busy.
Well, yeah. So they clean everything up. We have no idea the status of, you know, Monster Buzzy and Monster Fred. Doesn't matter. But then we get our last punchline, which is the dresser door opens and a furry brown snake thing pokes out its head and says, did you get my note?
Okay, so what is your reaction to, after everything we've seen here and all the masculinity issues our protagonist is dealing with, a furry snake popping its head out?
Seems like there's going to be a journey of self-discovery ahead.
It has a furry tongue. And this is where I thought Hitchcock maybe came in. Because he's always putting, like, oh, the train's entering a tunnel.
Oh, yeah.
When they're fucking. And, like, you know, just very obvious phallic metaphors and mm-hmm. stuff. So I thought maybe that's what the Hitchcock reference was about rather than a specific movie. Anyway, just when he got rid of babyhood, here comes adolescence. What did it say? Did it say it was evil?
It said, beware, bring this into your house, and you bring death. So it didn't say evil, it just said death.
I guess that's fair, because being born and procreating and all that stuff all leads to death.
I mean, even not procreating still leads to death.
Well, someone had to procreate at some point someone to die. But also getting older, right? Growing hair.
Do you think this snake is warning about the ravages of old age?
I think so. I think the snake's like, not a baby anymore.
You're dead.
But there's a twist. You're going to die. Which is what, like, Peter Pan is all about, right? Like, I want to stay a child forever because I don't want to have to age and be sad and then die.
Yeah.
Like Hook.
Like
Hook. Always hears the clock ticking. Mm-hmm. He's afraid of his time passing.
Yeah.
Should we do some taxonomies?
Let's do it. My first one. Frogging, which is P-H-R-O-G-G-I-N-G.
Is it a sex thing?
No, that's secretly living in someone's house without their knowledge or permission.
It might be a sex thing.
It could be a sex thing.
If you're spying on them and jerking it.
I can't speak to the jerking it part.
I feel like it probably happens.
I mean, if you're just living somewhere, yeah, then jerking it probably happens.
If you're living anywhere, really.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Well, I was thinking of a recent movie from Netflix called I See You with Helen Hunt, where she doesn't really have anything to do in the movie, but basically there's this sort of mid-movie twist, spoiler alert, where it turns out there are people secretly living in the protagonist family's home. And then there's also the movie The Rental, where mm-hmm. these people are on a, like, Airbnb getaway, and it turns out there's someone else there living there and filming them.
And remember that documentary we saw about the guy who owned the hotel who would, like, peep in on everybody who stayed in the hotel?
Oh, that's right.
It was really cool. I don't remember what it was called, but the thing that was so enjoyable about this documentary is they did tiny, detailed miniatures of the space and kept kind of zooming in on it and showing you how everything was put together. And I love a good miniature.
Yeah, I mean, and it's really scary, the idea that the place you think you know best, where you're the most comfortable, there's fucking someone else living here and you didn't say they could.
It's extremely scary.
Yeah, and you don't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
Criminal, they had some episodes where people talked about finding out that people were secretly living in their house.
Now I'm freaked out. Less of work.
I said house, not apartment.
Oh. Yeah, there are people living in this building. It is something I'm, like, always checking for when I get in a mood.
Yeah.
Gotta go look in all the closets. I mean,
here we'd be subletting the closets. It's different.
My first category is family money problems. Speaking of subletting the closets. So a lot of horror involves family money problems as an impetus for a bad decision or a source of stress. In this case, I'm thinking, of course, Amityville Horror is the classic example. Mm-hmm. This one reminds me a little more, though, of the classic horror story Ramona and her father. I love Ramona and her father, but I think what happens in that is her dad wants to become an artist and quits his job, or he loses his job and is like, maybe I could become an artist. Mm-hmm. And the mom is kind of cheesed at him, and Ramona's very defensive of her father and is very proud to feeling adult to be scrimping and pinching to make ends meet, as mm-hmm. she puts it. But it's a big source of strain and plays into certain escapism and anxiety that her and her sister have. And I think we could see some of that here. So mom and dad got him this gift that kind of signifies how they can't provide for him very well, because probably on some level, they feel like the dad is a failure, and I'm not saying you are if you're out of work, but they might. The parents probably have some of that internalized sense, and the kids are probably picking up on it, too. So I would imagine, although I don't feel like doing it right now, there'd be a way of looking that this whole story is grappling with feeling like your parents have failed in some way or are limited.
Well, the other thing, too, is what's hanging over them in the very beginning of the story is the possibility that they just have to leave all this behind anyway,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, it's possible if he gets a job that's somewhere far away, they just have to drop everything and go with it.
Yeah, that's true. And maybe it would be enjoyable for this kid to be able to escape some of his, where he comes from, you know?
I mean, like his sister's going to follow him wherever he goes, so.
But not his baby room.
No, not his baby room. My next one was secondhand stuff, a.k.a. deadly garage sale.
My next one was scary furniture. So similar.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, there are so many here. Monkey's Paw is one that, you know, classic story of finding an object and, ooh, it's more dangerous than it seems.
Yeah. I mean, it's related to what you were saying about the horror of someone being in your house you didn't know was there is I have this object, but someone had it before me. What did they do to it? It's the reason I will never pick stuff up off the street anymore, even if it looks perfectly good. Because it could have bed bugs.
And dogs have probably peed on it.
Yeah.
Very much so. There's this history. There might be hidden things about it that it's, you know, not like it just came out of the IKEA box.
It might have been involved in something messed up.
Mm-hmm. Could be not like something that came out of the IKEA box.
Who knows? Yeah, I had scary furniture relatedly, and I was thinking of, so we recently watched some really good sequel series, Amityville, A New Generation, and Amityville, It's About Time, which had to
What's
do...
What's it about?
Well, there was an evil mirror, and there was an evil clock.
That's right.
That had come from the Amityville house. It was this weird, like, turn in a series,
yeah,
where people had stuff from the Amityville house that brought bad luck with it. Actually, I liked both of them.
They're, yeah, if you know what you're getting into, they're very enjoyable in a, huh, way.
And of course, there's the classic asshole mirror we've talked about, mm-hmm. the movie Oculus.
There's the classic asshole mirror.
What's the person who wrote that story about the person who's a chair?
God, I don't remember.
From the perspective
such a good
of
chair.
The chair? Oh, there's a short story. We'll look it up. Oh, damn. And I forgot I wrote this down. I guess I had a lot to say on this one. But okay, so just to clarify about the person who's a chair, there's this story, and it's told from the perspective of this person who is sewn inside of a chair and is talking to you, who's the person who owns this chair and doesn't know they're inside of it. Yeah, I guess that when you bring the mirror into your house in this story. Oh, it's called The Human Chair by Edogawa Ronpo, it looks like. It's from 1925.
It's really good.
Wow. But anyway... The idea of not, of someone being in your house meets the idea of furniture having a life before you. But the other thing, did you ever sing the song in school about the grandfather clock?
Maybe.
It's about a grandfather clock that was in this kid's house, and it chugged along, and it was older than his grandfather, and it stopped short, never to run again, when the old man died, is the line.
Oh, I actually don't think I know this one. That's freaky.
Yeah, it's a song for children, too. It is freaky. But I think that song came to mind for me because it seems like sometimes the objects that we spend our life with have a weird connection to us, especially if it does something like measure your life or capture your image. Mm. And so I feel like our friend here is tied to the mirror in some way, especially because when he breaks it, Claudia pops by and says, well, now you have 7 years bad luck. He's not really rid of it.
Yeah, that's true.
What else you got?
Splatterpunk for kids.
That's I've been what I into splatterpunk lately.
Oh, that's what I felt like this was. So, splatterpunk is a subgenre of horror that is characterized by gory violence. The New York Times has this to say about it. Splatterpunk is regarded as a revolt against the traditional, meekly suggestive horror story. An early example is Michael Shea's The Autopsy, which was recently adapted in Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosity series, starring F. Murray Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one of the only good entries from that series, I think.
I remember that one, yeah.
So there, you know, in some examples would be Clive Barker, a writer who used to go by Poppy Z. Bright, but now is William Joseph Martin, Kathy Koya, I'm not sure, Richard Lehman. And the other way that a lot of people will be familiar with this is the sort of film analog, which a splatter film. And so Wikipedia has this to say, a splatter film is a subgenre of horror that deliberately focuses on graphic portrayals of gore and graphic violence. These films usually... through the use of special effects, display a fascination with the vulnerability of the human body and the theatricality of its mutilation. The term splatter cinema was coined by George A. Romero to describe his own film Dawn of the Dead, although I feel like arguably that's not really what we think of when we think of splatter films.
Would you put the later Saw movies in this category? Yeah.
Well,
like that one that was opened with that really stupid scene where the people were
seven.
In the threesome?
Yeah.
No, not... Oh, was it
yeah,
seven?
It was seven.
Okay. But it was Saw 7, not seven, the movie.
Yeah, so because that comes out of this later era of, like, quote-unquote torture porn...
Oh, yeah.
Torture porn is, I think, thought to come out of splatter. So it's, like, in a lineage with it. But, mm-hmm. yeah, I think you could call it that. And if you were, I think, trying to be film critic, you know, historicizing, you might separate them.
Is something like Martyrs a little too serious to be splatterpunk? Because I think...
I would think so, yeah.
Because
yeah.
Because when I think about the term, I feel like there's got to be like a little bit of glee to it.
Yeah, I think the theatricality, at mm-hmm. least in the, again, in the film version, is part of it.
And I feel like that's, like, the kids who read Goosebumps as a kid would probably grow up, many of them, to be into splatterpunk, because Arlstein really approaches showing gruesome, upsetting things with a bit of humor and, like, madcapness.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Which is enjoyable.
Yeah.
Especially for anyone who deals with depression or anxiety.
Exactly.
My next one was exoskeleton horror.
Ooh. That is horrifying.
Yeah, I just think a crab monster is scary. There is a crab horror subgenre, and I looked into some of those, but didn't see anything directly related. But I do think the choice to have a monster have an exoskeleton can really be upsetting on a very visceral level where it bothers you to imagine it clacking around.
Yeah, there definitely also were some, like, paperback horror novels about giant crabs. Mm-hmm. Grady Hendrix talks about this in his book, Paperbacks from Hell.
Yeah. So examples I came up with were Alien, Under the Skin, Babadook. There was a Tales to Give You Goosebumps installment. With the crab that, like, cuts the main character's head off.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, I forget what, they go back, like, into this cave. You remember
I remember what you're talking about, and I have no idea what it's called.
It or doesn't when we actually cut their head off, right?
Probably not.
I don't remember how it ends. I feel like it was ambiguous.
It was a snail, wasn't it? It was a shell?
I remember someone getting a crab, like, close to their head, and it was shell-shocked, yeah.
Yeah. I think we might be talking about two different things.
You're thinking of Uzumaki, which is Kenjiito.
I think we might be thinking about two different but similar stories.
Well, exoskeleton horror. Is a snail shell an exoskeleton?
I don't think so.
Well, it's gross. Uzumaki is a really horrible book and really fucking good. But anyway, I'm getting far afield. My point is exoskeletons are... Why do you think they're scary?
It's like... I think it's probably a sort of human lizard brain thing where it's like your outside's on your inside. Like, why are you so hard and shiny? I don't like it.
And it's very unpleasant to crunch them and have their softness all ooze out.
It's, yeah, the sound.
Well.
And then when the parts move, I'm like, shouldn't be happening.
Nope. Any other categories?
Yeah. My next one is friendship power struggle.
Because
a big part of the book, especially early on, is... Jason feeling very easily like, you know, he's superior to Fred in these ways specifically to do with masculinity. And then there's this turn where suddenly Fred is better than him. And you kind of get the sense Jason didn't actually really want that. And even though we learned that Puncher Fred is the monster, I wouldn't be surprised if actual Fred also has that aggression towards him.
I would imagine. And maybe part of the metaphorical fear at play here, or the fear that's being metaphorized here, is that if you're kind of shitting on your friend all the time, they might be getting feeling aggressive towards you, and it might come back and haunt you.
Yeah. Yeah. So a couple examples I thought of that were recent were Rose Red, the series on, I just think it's from the BBC.
That's cool.
Yeah. But there's a little bit of a friendship power struggle. And then the movie Sissy on Shudder.
Love it.
So good. But it's all about these shifting dynamics within friendships.
Bodies, bodies, bodies.
Yeah.
Yes. I had have to go back in to save someone. Barbarian. The People Under the Stairs. The recent Stephen King novel Fairy Tale, which I really would like to talk through with someone. If anyone's read it, give me a shout out on the socials. Are we going to use Twitter anymore?
I have no idea.
Like, I don't even know if our listeners are still on it. I haven't been on there in a long time, certainly not since it came to X. But I don't know what we should use instead besides Instagram.
I don't know either. Well, not going to learn about Mastodon or Blue Sky. I'm not doing it.
No, and I'm not going to make a TikTok.
No.
It's probably over by now anyway, right?
Yeah, probably.
Okay, so yes, it's something that really sucks for the main character. You have to go back in and save someone when you were smart enough to get out, but... That's what happens here.
And it's such a frustrating thing for the viewer when you know that they're safe, but they have to do this thing. And I feel like when it's pulled off really well, it's a really, you feel that dilemma. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like, oh, you don't need to go back in for your sweater or whatever.
But you do need to go back in for the dog.
Yes, you do. Amityville Horror. Where
yes.
It's like the one nice thing that guy does.
Yeah.
Well, my last one was, it wasn't a dream, aka it's worse than you thought. I thought about the scene from Rosemary's Baby where she realizes in the middle of being assaulted by Satan, you know, this is no dream. This is really happening.
Yeah.
And then there's movies like Haunt or The Invitation where something seems bad on the surface, but it turns out it's actually way worse. It's a really satisfying turn in horror when it's not it seems to be going in a certain kind of direction, right? Like, oh, you're this haunted house or whatever. And then it just takes even just a further turn and you're in very unexpected territory. I personally find it very satisfying.
Me too. Again, Barbarian.
Shared universe.
So it's been a long time. My notes right here, maybe you can help me understand. It says, two geeks from the audience. Earth geeks? But I don't know, two geeks from the audience. When did that come up? You know what? I actually found it in my notes. Apparently, at one point, he's talking with Fred about WWF and how it got violent when two geeks from the audience tried to get into the fight. So I put Earth Geeks, which I feel like is a little bit of a stretch even for me. You know, maybe this is the planet where the people who are like Earth Geeks must go come from. And they're like, some Earth Geeks got into the match. Maybe.
Or maybe they're just regular Earth Geeks because they're on Earth.
In law school, I've learned the phrase term of art, which is like you can say issue or you can say issue as a legal term, right? So maybe this is a term of art, Earth Geeks. Or it could be just actual geeks from Earth, as you said. I think it's unclear.
I assume that the two geeks thing is a reference to something that actually happened in the WWF at that time, but I will be damned if I know what that is.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I have some other stuff. What about you?
Well, this we started talking about a little bit already, but how would you compare this mirror to the mirror in Let's Get Invisible?
So I think the mirror technology in the Gooseverse is something I would really love to read somebody's analysis of.
Mm-hmm.
Mirrors seem to be permeable pretty consistently and have evil doubles in them. I think about, again, I brought up earlier The Ghost Next Door and how in at least some parts of the Gooseverse, you have a ghost version of yourself that's evil that's waiting to take over your body when you die, sometimes, if it manages to. And maybe somehow a bunch of these got contained in a mirror or the force that does that got contained in a mirror.
Yeah, it's interesting because I would have thought about those things a little differently. I feel like the doubles in Let's Get Invisible, we didn't see any evidence that they're monsters in the same way. They seem to just want to replicate and replace.
Mm-hmm. And a bunch of the Freds that got made in this one, they didn't even want to replace, but they seemed to replicate.
No, then they just like wandered off. But in this one, there's almost this like tongue-in-cheek callback to the you're going to be a ghost thing from The Ghost Next Door. And also to, like, this is like a reference to Let's Get Invisible with the sort of double in the mirror. I mean, it doesn't have to be Let's Get Invisible. Obviously, double in the mirror is not a super, is not a concept unique to that.
Well, within the Gooseverse, that's our major touchstone.
But it also takes your sort of expectation that it's just riffing on those things and is like, surprise,
mm-hmm.
There's a crab monster in here. So it's unclear to me whether this is like a portal to some other dimension, if it's some kind of, you know, enchanted thing where these monsters were banished to this weird mirror, but it seems different to me from the Let's Get Invisible mirror. But maybe that's only because we didn't see the full extent of the monstrosity of that mirror.
I've got a half-formed theory.
Okay.
So what are mirrors made of?
Glass.
And what are camera lenses made of?
Glass? I don't actually know.
I think in the one in Say Cheese and Die, probably, yeah. Uh-huh. So what if, much like in my reading of Say Cheese and Die, the intent in the heart of the person who looks through the mirror, through the lens, through the camera, their mens rea, if you will, it causes the evil thing to happen in the world.
So in your reading, Buzzy the Terrier sees himself as like a really tough dog. So that's what comes out.
And he's got a lot of rage and that's what comes out.
And so does Fred.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that tell us about Jason?
In his heart, he's barely human and wants to annihilate himself and others.
Yeah. All right. Let's go with that.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'll
take it. It'd be that easy. Yeah. So maybe just like wood is suspicious in the goose purse, so is glass, which means sand, probably also a problem.
I mean, in general, yeah.
Yeah. It gets everywhere. It's rough. I have another really stupid theory. I think I was tired when I wrote this.
Oh, why?
Back in March. Yeah. When we had a baby who was 1 year old. I put down, there's this part in the book where a hornet gets into the room and it's buzzing around, and then that's just never brought up again.
Mm-hmm.
Why was that scene there?
I want to say it was a reference to Peter Straub's ghost story.
Oh, tell me.
Because that's how that ends.
Really?
With a wasp.
What happens?
So I'm struggling to remember the entire sort of chain of events, but there's this, I think, entity that is like taking possession of different bodies, and this guy has like kidnapped this child in order to get it out. And then I assume kills the child. That must be what happens. But then basically there's also a wasp in the car. And so he sees that like the wasp has been possessed by this thing.
That's amazing. And also, yeah, it's a little bit The Fly and a little bit, Why I'm Afraid of Bees.
I was going to say, otherwise it's someone who went to switch bodies with someone.
So maybe like part of why Mir Jason has a exoskeleton and stuff is because he got kind of screwed up with a hornet.
Oh, are you thinking this is a story about the kid that Gary Lutz swapped with?
Could be. I mean, I think that kid was popular, but, you know.
True.
It could be something similar happening. We don't totally know the technology behind why I'm Afraid of Bees body swapping.
Because I'm trying to remember now. Did that kid, he must have consented to that procedure, right? Mm-hmm. They didn't just pick a random kid. Okay.
But they made a mistake by letting a bee get
in. Right, yeah.
What does any of this have to do with the dog being named Buzzy?
Oh.
Weird name for a dog.
It is.
Maybe
it is.
Just trying to call your attention to the hornet so you'll understand its significance when you grow up and read Peter Straub.
Yeah, he's really playing the long game, R.L. Stein.
I mean, I will say, having read a lot of Stephen King and only a little bit of Peter Straub, I think Peter Straub is undersung in our decade.
Yeah, probably.
When you go to the store, you can only find that one thing he wrote with Stephen King.
I know.
Even though he's really good.
My last note here under shared universe is, the fuck is the snake thing and have we seen it before?
Oh, that was my first theories and queries.
Oh,
can you
nice.
Explain the ending, furry-tongued snake?
No, I can't. Yeah, it's so strange that it's furry.
I don't know if...
From is the notes, whole thing not furry or is it just,
or is it just
tongue?
Its tongue? I'm not sure from my notes because I didn't write this down. I'm sure someone will tell us, but let's go with furry tongue.
Okay.
Sounds unpleasant.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's a warning against jerking it. Why does it end with a snake in a drawer? I mean, I think I kind of already covered this a little.
Why didn't the snake offer any help before this moment? Because he like waits till it's all done. He's like, oh, did you get my note?
Maybe the drawer was jammed shut.
Oh, that's what they said about the drawer, that it was jammed shut and therefore the dresser was useless.
Yeah, but then maybe the snake was stuck in there.
Or maybe it was just like, I'm going to see how this plays out. And then when it's broken, it's like, oh, yeah, wish I could have helped you out. It
sounds like the snake's a real Mothman, being like, oh, I tried to warn you.
Yeah.
And then just kind of sat back and watched.
Yeah, why didn't you understand what I meant when I said the bridge?
Exactly. Also, I mean, it sounds to me, of all the creatures we've seen, most similar to either some of the creatures at the beginning of Welcome to Camp Nightmare, you know, like, what was it, the prairie cats?
Mm-hmm.
Or the creatures in The Beast from the East, where it's like
yeah.
almost Dr. Seussian version of an everyday creature, but a little bit scary.
Yeah, it really does read it really does read Beast from the East.
Uh-huh. And Dr. Seuss.
And Dr. Seuss.
Which, by the way, folks, if it's been a minute since you read a Dr. Seuss book, just try to get through one. They are long as hell.
They're fucking long,
They're so long. Go Dogs Go is like 60 pages.
That's P.D. Eastman. But they're not the same person.
They're not the same person, okay. But same idea. Okay, yeah. Well, also, Green Eggs and Ham is like 60 pages.
It's really long, yeah.
Did you have any other thoughts on the furry-tongued snake?
No, I didn't.
No explanation?
No, none, except for maybe kind of a jerk.
I mean, funny. It's like supposed to be the little funny bit at the end, like at the end of How I Got My Shrunken Head, where it's like, oh, well, I forget what I said.
And that ends up being the last word in the entire series, too. spoken by this, like, goofy snake.
Did you get my note? How does that read to you as Orlstein's comment on the series as a whole?
Did you see what I did there?
Yeah. I mean, that's a very... I feel like he's got the kind of dad humor where that would be what he wants, like, you to come away with at the end, is noticing what he did there.
Yeah.
I think I had a lot of the same territory as you. I had questions about the mirrors, same as you, and about the ending, about how it's a story about when friends change, when you change, and being out of step with those changes, which I think is kind of a poignant way to end the series 2000.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just getting my theories and queries notes, and we've covered most of it, including why are garage sales / antiquing so spooky. But then I have one note here that I wish I knew what I was thinking. It says, unified theory of mirrors and clocks in the Gooseverse.
Oh, I would like to know what you're thinking, too. I'd love to read your thesis.
I might have been wanting to ask you about one, but I guess we'll never know.
Well, I had a unified theory of cameras and mirrors.
Yeah, that's pretty close, actually.
Yeah. And we did talk about clocks a little bit.
Did clocks come up in this? Why did I say clocks?
I think because you were thinking of the Cuckoo Clock of Doom.
Mm-hmm.
And how...
As I do.
Yeah. It is also a creepy thing from a garage sale that screws with you.
It's from an antique store.
Right. They're similar.
Yeah, you know.
Well, Goosepunks, this... I would like to return to what I was saying about poignancy. Do you feel like it's poignant?
The end of the story?
The end of the series 2000.
Yeah, I also feel like it ended on a high note, which...
Not on Monster Blood 4.
Yeah. Or, yeah, exactly.
No, it's like if the original series had ended on I Live in Your Basement, actually. I think they're stories that are very in tune with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if we think of each series as a little generation following it as they grow up out of kids' stories and into... teen stories.
Ah, series 2000 grew up so fast.
I know, it did.
Not for us. So it took slow. Us like 2 years.
And we still have so many more series to get through in this. So as we said, we're going to switch gears to do a wrap up on the series, talk about Ungodly Goosebumps, which thank you, Women Enthusiast, for directing me to that beautiful thing. And then we're going to get into, I think, some of the stories.
Mm-hmm.
Tales.
Yeah, we'll do tales. We'll do more tales. We want to wrap up those. And we'll do Superstitious.
Yeah. And I think, so the rough plan is we want to continue with some of the other, with the other series, getting through, there's the one that's the set in Horrorland.
Oh, Horrorland, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. So there's a couple more series ahead. Arlstein is still producing. There's the TV show coming out. But also we want to cover some side quests. So other similar types of horror fiction. That like Shivers and things like that that came out around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll dip into those as well sometime in the next several years that we continue doing this.
On a scale of 1 to 5 bewares, what would you give The Ghost in the Mirror?
I feel like it's just a 3.5 for me.
Really?
Yeah, like it's a fine story. I've seen a lot of it before. The monster thing was surprising. The furry snake thing was surprising. It is a solid 3.5. I'm not sad I read it. I'm not angry at it. I'm not wowed.
So I feel like my point of view is colored by the fact that, like, the bar is on the floor, and I was feeling so just beaten down by most of series 2000. I give it 4.5.
Okay. Agree to disagree. Well, agree that we have different ideas about it.
Yeah. No, I just, like, it took fun turns. It was gross. It really, like, went there in places, and I was like, yeah. You ripped a fucking monster's eyeballs out of its head. Good
that
for
was
you.
Really fucking yeah. cool, actually.
Yeah.
And a great way to, you know, get to the spirit of Series 2000 with its leveled up horror. As a quick sidebar, I do want to say that even though we had one hell of a year, I'm very happy right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm exhausted, but I'm really happy.
Yeah, and we're happy to be back.
Yeah. I think... becoming a lawyer instead of a professor is probably one of the best things I've done for my mental health, even though on the books, it was an incredibly stupid decision. I had a summer job this year that I loved. It's the best job I ever had. I'm really enjoying myself. And it seems like you are too.
I am too. Yeah.
We hope you are too. So yeah, Goosepunks, tell us what you thought of Ghost in the Mirror. I guess I will log into X/Twitter just to see what's been happening.
@SayPodAndDie.
Yeah, @SayPodAndDie, and let you all know that we'll probably not be using that platform anymore, and ask you to please come join us on Instagram.
Also at Say Pod and Die, or send us an email at saypodanddie@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Eventually, we'll collect some of your emails and read them.
We've got a few good ones waiting in the pipeline.
Rate this podcast wherever you found it. Listener beware.
Those were the scares. Good boo.
Good boo.
But in the glass, the murky dark glass, the shadows were dancing, rolling, moving closer. I watched in open-mouthed silence as the shadows split in two, formed two misty figures, a tall figure and a short dot of a figure. A dog? Buzzy? And why did the other figure, the tall, lean one, why did it remind me of Fred? Was it the narrow, rounded head? The slender, bony shoulders? His posture? The way the faceless, cloudy figure stood hunched with its head hanging down? Was I really staring at shadow figures of Fred and Buzzy, or was I totally losing it? Wind howled outside the window. At least I thought the howling came from outside. The room grew even darker. The figures in the mirror faded. I shoved my cold hands deep into my pockets and squinted into the mirror. Dark now. Dark as night. The figures had vanished. I stared at the smooth, dark glass and trembled. I'm afraid, I realized. I'm afraid of my own bedroom. There's something inside this mirror. What does it want?